All right, everyone. Hello. Welcome to the second edition of the Duck Lake podcast. My name is Mark.
Oh, I'm Pedro Hollanda.
And we are two of the sort of main developers, I would say, of Duck Lake, the Duck Lake specification and the Duck Lake extension. And we're here to talk about the Duck Lake 1.0 release. So let's kick it off with a quick intro to Duck Lake. Maybe, Pedro, you can tell us a bit about Duck Lake.
Yeah, of course. So Duck Lake is a data lake format that was actually designed by initially Mark and Hannes. I think Mark worked on it for like 6 months, and then I kind of took over since last August, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been less than a year since it was.
It's about a year ago that we were here recording the podcast talking about the initial release.
Yeah, that's crazy, crazy times. And I think the inspiration that came from designing Duck Lake is the realization that you and Hannes had, right? Like that I even have this picture in my office. If it's going to be worth it, like millions one day, if someone wants to buy it, just message me. But it's basically you have the, can I call it maybe the data file zoo of the metadata, a bunch of JSON files, a bunch of ABRA files, a little database on the top, and the Parquet files where the data are, right? And I think you guys stared at a picture and the picture told you all this metadata could be a database system, could be in the catalog.
For sure.
So that's what Duck Lake basically is. It's a new data lake format that your catalog is actually, your metadata files are actually stored in your catalog and not as files anymore.
Exactly. It's a change of, it's sort of a change from the file-based formats like Iceberg, like Delta that have been up and coming and very popular nowadays, kind of back in a way towards data management systems. Of course, we came up with this because we are database people at our core, right? We build a database system. So anything where we replace a database system with files to us kind of feels like a step back. Like that's what they did way back in the 60s before database systems were invented. They did files. So why would we go back to doing files? And I think the realization we had was that a lot of the problems that are faced in these modern lakehouse formats can actually be solved by using a database system directly. And I think that also the other thing is that they have been stepping towards using a database system to begin with, right? They have been using database systems now in their stack already. So given that you already have to have one, sort of the initial sort of, you already pulled off the Band-Aid, right? You've already said,
why not store everything in there, right?
Why not just go all in on that? So what are some of the problems that it solves?
Well, we actually had a blog post released recently, for those who don't know, called Data Inlining for Duck Lake. So in traditional lakehouse formats, every time that you have a small insertion or a small update, you have to create not only the data files, but also the metadata files that you're going to use to traverse to figure out, like, okay, which files you actually want to read. If you have a catalog as a database system, that kind of changes the picture. Like, I think you realize initially that, hey, I can actually have a table here.
You can store data in a database. It's revolutionary.
Crazy. This crazy idea that was absolutely completely new. And you can actually use the database system that's already there to execute queries on top of that. So that's basically what we did there. And the results, when you compare to the traditional way of doing it, so of creating all these files, it's astonishing. Like, I think we managed to get like 1,000x difference comparison when running aggregations, because imagine you're on S3, you have like your machine on EC2. Every time that you want to run a query, now you have to read like thousands of little files and execute a query on each of them and then aggregate the results and blah, 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 blah. While if you do it in a database system, it's just a query running on Postgres or DuckDB or whatever catalog you want. So I think that was one of the major differences we've seen, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think that's definitely one of the major ones. I think another one is kind of the operational simplicity of it as well. Because once you have a database system in the stack, you're already, like, for Duck Lake, that's all you require. But for the other lakehouse formats, it's kind of the start of what you need to do to be able to run your lakehouse workload. You don't need just a database system. You need to somehow manage all these files. You need a REST server in front of the database system. So there's like a lot more things to set up. From an architecture point of view, it's a lot more complex to manage.
I think one other cool thing from the design and architecture of DuckLake is that DuckLake itself is not very complex, right? It's almost, sure. you literally have some glue C++ code that does, that sends the queries and gets the results back.
Yeah. Well, that's the extension, right?
So the extension, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That we should talk about the difference between the implementation and the spec,
for sure,
of course.
For sure.
But I think that does allow us, this architecture does allow us to be much more simple in our implementation as well. And I think one thing that proves that is how far we got basically with two people, not even working at the same time, working on this for a year.
Yeah, less than a year.
Less than a year. Yeah. Like the spec and the architecture decisions there, they just allow you to really quickly implement things because you end up relying like on very well-defined and well-battle-tested technologies, right?
Like a database system.
All right, you just need like a Parquet reader and writer, database system, and some C++ code maybe to glue the things together.
Some file system as well to store your files.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So, or a blob store, again, like S3 suffices. Although I did hear that S3 recently released the file system, so that's exciting
true.
Although somewhat orthogonal. So maybe we can talk a bit about the specification and the extension, because there is a bit of confusion there that we see in practice, because we have, of course, DuckDB, the database system. DuckLake is maybe unhelpfully named very similar to DuckDB, but one of the things that we have tried to do when developing DuckLake is to ensure that it is not just a DuckDB project only. It is actually a standalone specification for how you can manage a lakehouse, essentially how you can manage a lakehouse, right? So we publish every single aspect of that specification because it's all a database. In a database, it's just a bunch of SQL queries, right? We publish that separately from the extension, and we welcome anyone else to implement it.
And I think that it's kind of funny because since our spec and our implementation, they have the same name as well. Sometimes even to me, it's confused. Like we're talking, like we're designing something in the office, and then you say something like, but you mean the spec change, right?
Okay.
So indeed, and I think we've been doing a decent job at keeping the spec up to date with the implementation as well. Because I think one thing that we've been doing that's really great to this type of technology is that we just didn't sit down and like design the spec and, hey guys, this is it. Make our implementation. It's going to work TM. We actually have been doing the implementation together with the spec to prove that things should work on that direction. And even then, sometimes we're surprised like, oh, we actually need to do a little spec change to self-correct something that we, a detail that we didn't think about. But yeah, like these two things, they are separate, but at the same time, they're kind of intertwined, but not really.
And of course, we are sitting here because of the 1.0. And I think this actually marks a bit of a departure from this intertwinedness, because we are kind of, with the 1.0, we're saying that the specification is heading towards stability. It's heading towards maturity, right? But not necessarily the implementation. Our implementation of DuckLake, which is basically a DuckLake reader, writer, an interface for DuckDB itself, may still evolve drastically. It may still get much better, get more support for things. But with DuckLake 1.0, we're specifically saying the implementation, the specification. Sorry, I got confused myself.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
The specification is stabilizing. And that's part of why we're doing this. Well, why are we doing this again? Just trying to get the conversation
Of course. Otherwise, we're going to blab for an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I think a couple of things are important for the specification to be stable. One of them is that we can now actually guarantee backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
So basically, if we evolve the specification, how can you take the implementation even to go to travel between these different specifications, right? Like how the queries look like, how the tables look like. What do you do if you have a new feature that cannot be answered on the previous specification, or how you port bug fixes and things like that, right? And I think the other big thing of having now a stable specification is that we will invest much more in terms of having these queries out there and them being very clear for others to also make their own implementations, right? Because Currently, I think it's fair to say that we are the only ones that have a complete implementation.
For sure.
And that is also a bit of our fault because we did take certain liberties to be able to also advance faster, right?
Yeah.
And I think what changes now is that we're going to do a little bit of a stop in that. It doesn't mean that we're not going to continue evolving. We're going to talk about that a bit later on the podcast. But it means that now it's more like, okay, we're going to focus a lot on bug fixes and we're going to focus a lot on really making things backwards compatible and making things easy for others to implement. And one thing that we put a lot of effort into having this stable as well was thinking about how can we make a duck lake run for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Like have someone actually having this running in production and having it working. And one of the things we did was the checkpointing, for example, right?
I mean, that's a great... We can talk about what we have changed since the first release, right? Because, of course, we have been working on Duck Lake. It's been a year. It released already, I think, with a lot of features. Like, we did a... I mean, not to toot my own horn here, but I think we released it quite with already a lot of features that were already working quite well. But obviously, we have not been sitting still. So maybe we can talk a bit about like what has changed since the initial Duck Lake, I think 0.1 release we called it, and what you're going to get now when you hop onto Duck Lake 1.0.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we were focused on having these things running for a long time. And one thing is when you have a data lake, whatever it is, running for a long time, you're going to end up with files fragmented. Yeah. You're going to end up with files that got orphaned. For example, if you had an insertion that maybe failed in the middle and now you have a file, but it's not actually in your catalog, you're going to end up with snapshots that you probably want to expire. So you probably want to merge your small files. You probably maybe even want to merge files with their deletion files and just have like the latest file for read optimization. So that's really what we focus on. We developed like this checkpoint function that basically englobs all these cleanup maintenance that you usually have in data lakes. And they basically have global options, and these options can also be set per schema or table, and people can just like have their own goal, right? Like they can do whatever they want, and basically like, okay, I've been running my Duck Lake for one day on my streaming workloads, and now I just want to flush all my data in and compact everything, checkpoints.
Because one interesting thing about these lakehouse formats is, of course, the time travel. That is one of the sort of cool features of lakehouse formats. But time travel also means that you can never really delete data, right? So that's it's kind of like at odds with keeping a lean database because if with time travel, you're kind of saying to the user, we will never lose your data, even if you explicitly request to delete it through the regular sort of SQL interface, right? If you type delete, you can get back your old data still. So how will we ever be able to get rid of the data? How will we ever... get rid of old snapshots, old code that can accumulate. So that's kind of like one of the things that as like we try to make these things self-managing, but some maintenance does have to happen. So what we have done is we have set all these routines where you can perform this maintenance and have chosen what we believe to be sensible defaults that you can use to basically almost automatically do this maintenance. And of course, you can configure these things. And I think one thing to note there as well is that because Duck Lake does only stores the Parquet files, and because we do things like the data inlining, and we have the partial files, we do delete inlining as well, there is a lot less maintenance required when running Duck Lake than with traditional lakehouse formats. But there is, of course, still some maintenance required. And that's one of the things we have been focusing on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even if you still do... Well, because the inlining, it will allow you to write small chunks of data into your catalog. But of course, if your data is above the inlining threshold, it'll still create files. And these files might be bigger than your inlining, but they might be still quite small. So maybe you still want to compact them, right? So yeah, as you said, I think we already have mechanisms to protect this compared to other data lake formats. But indeed, these are super valuable.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to need to, at some point, say, after I delete some data, the user is going to have to say, I don't need the old data anymore. I'm sure of it. actually get rid of the file. Like, that's just the by nature of the way the time travel works, you just need to have that. Because the alternative is that you randomly lose the data without the user knowing about it, right? It's a decision. It's not so much a implementation that's missing. It's a decision the user has to make.
Absolutely. And it's not only time traveling, right? Like the CDC as well.
That's related in the change data capture. That's also related, where you can see which changes were made in the past. It's in a way also similar to it's very adjacent to time travel. Use all the same features.
Absolutely. It's kind of the same thing, but in a different
angle. Yeah, exactly. You just look at what has changed instead of looking at the old file. But of course, if you want to see what rows were deleted, you have to still store the old rows.
Yeah, I think also with the, especially from 0.4 to 1.0, we put a lot of efforts into routing issues. So I think one of our DevRel people, they literally told us, like, how many issues were fixed, like, last month?
I think it was like 40 issues.
40 issues, So that has been, because of course, again, we're talking here about the DuckLake 1.0, the specification, but the extension, we also put a lot of efforts into trying to make sure that especially like data losses or anything like that, they would be resolved as soon as possible. And this is something that we're going to keep up doing.
For sure. I mean, the stability is the 1.0 is specifically talking about the specification. But of course, the implementation, we also want this to be as stable as possible. And we want people to run this in production.
Yeah. So regarding the spec evolution, okay, we reached 1.0. We've been talking, okay, this is stable now.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean for the spec evolution?
I would say it doesn't mean that it's not going to evolve anymore. It's just going to be more structured and slower. I think this is the nature of any specification, that it has to be, the evolution has to be much slower. Because if you, like in the past, when we were working towards the 1.0, we were making changes very quickly, making changes to the specification very quickly. And that just doesn't, that works fine if you're the only one implementing a specification. But obviously, if you're the only one implementing a specification, it's not really a specification, it's an implementation. That's precisely where we want to move away from, right? So there will most likely be a DuckLake 2.0. There may also be a spec like a DuckLake 1.1 or 1.2 if we find like more alongside of bug fix things in the specification where there's like actual significant problems we encounter. But those will be more minor. There might be a DuckLake 2.0 that features like some more major features. We'll talk more later on about what those might be. But essentially, it'll be a slower evolution specification-wise, which doesn't mean our implementation won't keep on improving, of course.
Yeah, I think just to give an idea of what would be a spec change for a bug fix, I think we had at some points, we were compacting files that were following different schema ranges. So we needed like a specification change to be able to track these, like just one extra table that says like, okay, this is when my table changes, like from the snapshot to the snapshot to the snapshot to the snapshot and so on and so forth. So we knew it. So this is an example, right? Like it's a small specification change. We ended up like in a very small table. It's only used like in a couple places, but its purpose is to fix an actual bug. Like things would go wrong if that was not there. And I think when we talk about a specification change for a feature, is literally something completely new, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is something that will be much slower. Like I don't think there were the DuckLake 2.0. We're not planning to do for most likely at least a year, maybe more. It very much depends. But I think it's going to be at least some time, precisely because we want others to also adopt the specification and start making some implementations of it themselves, right? And we have actually already seen some independent implementations appearing, right?
Absolutely. We had our friends from Hot Data that have contacted me, I think, like a couple months ago, because they've been developing a data fusion implementation. And I've also been in contact with some other people that have been implementing kind of like a alpha, maybe, that's how I could say, versions for Spark and for Trino. And what is very clear to me is that with our specification the way it is, it's rather straightforward to build a reader.
Yeah.
A writer is a very different story. But I think this is the same with the other data lake formats we had in-house, right? Like, it's always the reader is a bit easier than the writer.
Yeah.
Because you can also use something else to write it very easily and just try to read it.
In general, I would say so, although I will say that from what I've heard from our engineers, the other lakehouse formats, building a reader is also not so trivial.
Okay. That's probably correct. So I think we've been in communication with them. And one of the things that I suggested very early on for the people building the Data Fusion Duck Lake reader writer was to actually rely a lot on what we were doing, because our specification was not there. I'm very much aware of that. But you can still have a testing pipeline where you're always producing and reading whatever you're doing with our own implementation of Duck Lake, because in a way, our implementation is more of the source of truth than the spec. This will change.
Yes, exactly.
The spec will become the source of truth, and our implementation will also have to follow it. But it was a very fruitful conversation. So one of the challenges they had was actually adapting our tests, because our SQL is sometimes a bit idiomatic to DuckDB. So I think there are opportunities for ourselves even to facilitate onboarding of other people building in this ecosystem, right? One of the other things that we already started, one of our DevRels, Guillermo, already built a tool that will basically always keep the queries we use inside the system available on the website, and we'll version them. So that will be very useful as well, right? Because then if you want to follow absolutely the click 1.0, you can copy and paste the SQL queries. And assuming you have a decent catalog, it shouldn't be too bad. So, yes.
That sounds excellent. And we're planning to do some more along those lines, right, to make it easier for others to adapt DuckLake 1.0. Like, we're also planning to define levels of support and compliance with the 1.0 spec so that you can say that, oh, you have read support for DuckLake 1.0, you have read-write support, you have read-write plus maybe alter table support, or you can, like, which kind of features that you implement, and also work more on a general testing framework that is not DuckDB specific that you can use. Of course, our implementation still will probably be very useful in building these kind of things, because again, DuckDB itself is relatively easy to use and deploy together with DuckLake. You can quite easily spin up any sort of DuckLake and test reading and writing to it, also using DuckDB.
And I think one thing that's very useful to us is for anyone out there that wants to try to build something like this, just if you run into things that are not clear in the spec, tell us, or send a PR to the website, because sometimes when you write the specs as well, we might end up not putting all the implementation details that are necessary to implement it, because some things might be obvious to us, but they're not obvious to others. So that's why I think it was so fruitful to have this conversation with someone that's actually attempting to build a DuckLake outside DuckDB with nothing related to DuckDB, just DuckLake on somewhere else.
For sure. All right. So we already talked about a few of these cool new features. There's a lot more. There will be a blog post, right, for the DuckLake 1.0?
Yeah. There will be a blog post. It will cover, I think, most of these the new features and configurations, and the website will be completely revamped, I heard.
That's awesome.
I had some sneak peeks, but I'm not a designer, but I think it's looking pretty good. But yeah, we talked, of course, about data inlining. Again, there's a blog post about it. The basic idea is that we don't have the files anymore. Everything is in the catalog. When your data grows sufficiently, or you want just to, I don't know, have the files for some migration purpose or thing like that, you can just flush it to files, and the system, the DuckLake will already provide you with the files on the right size, because there's like some size limitations. And I mean, yeah, for those interested, there's a blog post. I think the results are very cool. The checkpoint we also talked about is all the maintenance that you can now run to keep your DuckLake up to speeds. But there's also new types, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think you've been working very closely to one of them.
Yeah, of course, of course. I think the biggest new types there are have been the geometry and the variants. Both cool in their own ways, of course. Geometry, it is the type we know and love. It's a cool little thing. It is also in the Parquet spec, right? You have the Geo Parquet, I think, that gets written. I'll have to delegate to Max for the actual implementation details there. He's our geometry expert. But it's also fully supported in DuckLake now, including also the statistics and the metadata catalog, right?
Yeah.
So you could do like file-based pruning based on these geometry statistics. And we also have variant support, which is a nifty little type that Thijs has spent, I think, the better part of a year on working on. It is a rather complex. It's basically the idea of we have a type system, but what if we didn't? Or what if we had a type system within one type? It's basically, I think the best way to phrase it so people understand what it is just saying it's JSON++.
It is JSON++. That's how I understand
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's effectively what it is. Because JSON is a nice type. It's very useful. However, there are some issues with it. One is that it has very few types, right? Like, I think there's maybe 7 types in JSON. You have, like, object, array, integer, floating point number, null, if you count that as a type, I guess. And a string, and I think that's it. Maybe there's only 6 types, or maybe I'm forgetting one.
I have to call Thijs for that one.
I have to call the experts, get them on the phone. But for variants, the idea with variant is that what if JSON actually had full-fledged type support?
Absolutely.
And support all the types that a regular database system supports, because there's some very critical types that are just you use every day that are not in JSON, things like date, timestamp, or like UUID that are just missing from there. And in JSON, you basically always have to store these as strings and then you have to reconstruct them again. That's both very inefficient and just not very user-friendly. But the main, I think, main gain of variants is that we can shred them, which basically means that we can look at the actual data that's stored within the variant. And if there is a consistent schema or like somewhat consistent schema, we can turn those into native types. So let's say you have like a a JSON that represents like a log message or something, right? Usually log messages, they are variable and you might have some changes, right? Like maybe you include a new field every now and again, but they are very structured. Like you have a timestamp field, you have a UUID in there, maybe to identify what the log relates to. You have maybe a message that's a string, right? There's like some structure there. And if you store everything as a JSON, you lose a lot on various things. One is that you lose the ability to compress very well, usually, because you're just storing text. You're getting a lot of repetition. Generally, like column names are repeated, right? If you have a JSON that has like a field that's like that's called message, and then the actual message, you will repeat message within every single JSON field. So you get a lot of repetition, bad compressibility, and you also get bad performance because you need to like drill down into the JSON and actually parse it and extract the field. So that is all way better supported in the variant type. And DuckLake specifically, we also extract statistics from these shredded variant fields into DuckLake, which means you can do file-based pruning, which means that if you're doing filters on these variant columns, you could get basically near native or maybe even native performance.
Yeah, that's super crazy. I think the only thing from the variants that we ended up missing was the inlining for the other catalogs. So it works for DuckDB.
Oh, yeah.
Because, of course, DuckDB has a variant, but Postgres and SQLite, yeah, I had this question today and I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
That's for a future.
DuckLake 4.1, wink, wink.
it'll happen.
It will happen. Absolutely, it will happen. But yeah, I think one of the other cool new features was the set sorted by. So the basic idea is that when you're doing compaction or inlining, you can actually sort a table with some predefined columns or expressions. And this was actually developed by Alex Monahan from Motherduck. And he also submitted an extra PR to do that during ingestion time. And I think that's quite powerful as well, right? Because that that will allow you like to do better pruning, and especially like when you're just flushing or compacting, like you're already on this checkpointing cost anyway, so you can enjoy that space to reorganize your data. So I think that's also a very nice feature.
Yeah, it's quite elegant because the sortedness is not a global property, which is essentially impossible to maintain for any sort of sizable lakehouse, but it's on each file. And that means you can, you basically get better alignment according to whatever sorting criteria you want to specify, which is almost always timestamp, I would say. Or like generally, if you have time series data, you're probably going to sort by timestamp. But it's a very cool feature.
And I think one of our cool features as well that came from the Austin Outside contributor was the speed up of add files, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's something that we didn't have when we launched DuckLick initially. It was basically the ability to add arbitrary files into your DuckLick, arbitrary Parquet files. So previously, we would have to have those Parquet files be written by DuckDB. And now what you can do is you can just point DuckLick at a existing Parquet file. And I think that already solves actually a lot of integration problems because it means that even though you may not have DuckLick write support in Spark natively, you can just write a Parquet file with Spark and then tell DuckDB to register in DuckLick, and that already kind of solves that issue for you, right?
As long as it follows like the table schema that you have, that's totally okay, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, there's some evolution also supported there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But indeed, it needs to, of course, contain at least somewhat the same columns for it to make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
there are some flags you can set, actually, so you can tell it, oh, I accept missing columns and I accept new columns, and that then allows you to write add files that have nothing to do with the original table and add them, and then everything will just be null because it can't find any of the columns. But it's it works, and it's quite flexible as well because it does. We have this. It's a bit maybe too technical, but in Parquet, there's two ways of mapping column names. One is through the name-based mapping, which is where you look at the column names, and the other is where you look at field IDs, which is an internal field within a Parquet file. Normally, DuckLick uses this field-based mapping, and it's also used by Iceberg. However, DuckLick is flexible enough to also allow name-based mapping, which greatly simplifies writing Parquet files for DuckLick because you just need to match up the column names, which every system that writes Parquet files can write column names. But not every system that writes Parquet file can write field IDs.
Absolutely.
And especially for like nested types, this gets like pretty hairy. So,
I think now we can also move on like to the things people are doing with DuckLick, right?
Yeah, yeah. If anyone wants to know more about the cool features, you can read the blog post. That's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And try them out. Let us know what our experience has been. So, yeah, things people are doing with DuckLick. I think we have our biggest supporter in that sense, which is ModderDuck, right? Like they've been having. I think they're with DuckLick 0.4 now or 0.3. But they basically have support for DuckLick or in the cloud, right? Like if you don't want to set up any of this, if you don't want to have to figure out how to run your own Postgres, or they just have this all prepared for you, and you can just run as many DuckLicks you want with all their ecosystem integrations. I think they have like a Fivetran or a DBT.
Yeah.
And everything just works. So.
You get a managed DuckLick, which is really cool because in a sense that gives you the best of both worlds in a way, that because if you were to use like native ModderDuck, it's amazing, but you do get all your data stored within a sort of proprietary data format,
yes.
Right? And the nice thing about DuckLick, and I think one of the reasons why people are looking at these lakehouse formats, is that your data is no longer stored or like locked away in a proprietary database. And especially for like very large data sets, that's very appealing because that means that you no longer need to pay any sort of migration cost to get the data out again. You can just directly query it. So I think that's a very cool thing that if you want to try out DuckLick and you don't want to host it yourself, I think that's a very appealing option because you can still later on potentially decide, oh, I want to use Spark to read this data after all. And you can just natively read it without having to first like get your data out again, right? You can just use the Parquet files, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And You're absolutely right. It's just being able to not be locked in by any vendor. We of course seen also from I think Madhive. Am I pronouncing this correctly?
Madhive.
Yes. They had a blog post with us as well about the frozen duck lake, which I think it uses the add data files, right?
Yeah. I think that's actually a super cool idea. It was not something we had originally considered when we designed Duck Lake, because we really thought of this as more like an operational thing, right? Where you have a database server that's running and you can add files and query them through that. But through kind of a unique combination of DuckDB's file-based storage format and like DuckDB itself being a valid Duck Lake backend, and DuckDB files being queryable over HTTP or S3 or like anything on the internet, you can do this thing where you can just publish a DuckDB database file and a bunch of Parquet files. And the DuckDB database file can be your entry point into the database by referring to these Parquet files, right? So it's the DuckDB file itself is very small. And that's kind of cool because normally if you publish data, you have this problem where it's hard to index the data. So generally what you see if you publish a bunch of data is you have a bunch of links to a bunch of Parquet files or something. If you're lucky, right? Usually it's CSV files. Sorry, no offense. Pedro is our CSV expert, of course. Usually it's a bunch of CSV files. But then if you have a second table, that gets tricky. And the cool thing about using this frozen duck lake is that you can publish your files in a very efficient compressed format. You can add new files to it periodically, which is usually how it goes. You publish a new dump every month, every day, every week or something. And you can have this multi-table setup within that one file that potentially includes views, macros, like anything cool that you want. And it's very powerful.
The thing we should talk about now, Mark, is the elephant in the room.
Oh, yeah.
It's something that we have promised. I think we're not fully yet there, but we're partially yet there, which is Iceberg compatibility.
Yeah.
Thijs, one of our Iceberg experts, has been the one that has actually been working quite hard on it and has been complaining with me every time that I broke the specifications. Like, oh, Grevo, now I have to redo the Iceberg.
He's going to be happy about the 1.0.
Yeah, I know. He's like, oh, it's backwards compatible. I like it. So, yeah, the reading is supported, like including the time travel. The nice thing of it is because we do support the Iceberg file formats, this is all kind of zero copy, right? Like, basically what Thijs's function does is it transforms the zoo of metadata files into a duck lake catalog. That's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. And to also allow that for the v3 of Iceberg, we recently added experimental deletion vectors in the same format as they have to also allow us to continue reading it. However, writing is a different story. It's slightly more complex.
For sure.
And yeah, I think the main problem that we face there is that we have this thing that we think is very smart and very cool, right?
Yeah.
they might agree or not, it's unclear, but we call them the partial files. And we have these both for inserts and deletes currently. And basically, it's a way that in our own file, we can have multiple snapshots pointing to a data in one file, right? So you can say, okay, these three rows are from snapshot 3. These other three rows are from snapshot 4. These other three rows are from snapshot 5, including for the deletes. So you know where you need to apply these.
And why do we do that?
Well, to not have a bunch of files that you need to keep opening. And also, it allows you to reduce replication of data, right? For example, for the deletes.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you don't need like a single delete file for each of these snapshot groups. Now you have only one.
Yeah. So maybe to expand a bit on that, obviously my question was not because I didn't know, it was to get the conversation flowing.
You almost got me.
So the reason we do partial files, it's a very important feature, is because it's a key thing in solving the small file problem. Because if you offer time travel with multiple snapshots, if for every single snapshot you have to write at least one file, that means that if you have a million snapshots, you need a million files, which is not sustainable. And one of the core features of Duck Lake is to make lightweight snapshots. And the partial files are critical to that because that allows you to have a single Parquet file that contains maybe a million rows. And then that single parquet file could represent the insertions made by 100, 1,000, 10,000 snapshots, while still maintaining this sort of fine-grained time travel. However, in Iceberg, at this moment, sadly, that's not yet possible. So that means that if we were to convert a duck lake to an iceberg, you would not lose any data, right? Like, we could do a full-on data copy. All the parquet files are in the right format. All the deletion files are in the same format. You could do a full-on data copy, like not data copy, like metadata copy, and it would be fully compatible for the latest snapshot. And that's kind of the sort of the kicker, because Iceberg does not support this sort of pointing at a parquet file and saying the first row belongs to this snapshot, the second row belongs to this snapshot. We could not transfer all of the snapshots or in all of the time travel, which means you would lose some information on the time travel.
Yeah, basically surrounding what the files are, right? I guess we could potentially rewrite everything, but that's very yucky.
You could rewrite those files. You could drop snapshots. Those would both be options. But it would, of course, be expensive. I think what is most realistic is that we will settle for a sort of latest snapshot-only export, or potentially we will have a mode in Duck Lake where we will not write these partial files, in the implementation, that is,
of
right? Because the specification still supports partial files, but where the implementation would basically pinky promise not to write partial files. And then in our export to Iceberg, we could look at the catalog and say, are there any partial files in this snapshot? If not, we can export a snapshot, which then would allow us to export all the snapshots. However, that has, of course, the big caveat that means you're basically reinventing the small files problem again.
Exactly.
my ideal way forward here would be to convince the Iceberg people that they need to do this.
I mean, I think that's absolutely what sounds to my very unbiased person the correct decision here. But of course, this is very much an open problem to us still, right? Like, we still have to define exactly which route we'll take. And sometimes to me, it's even a bit unclear the scenario where you would want to write to Iceberg. I guess there can be tools that already can read Iceberg and maybe want to plug these with Duck Lake, and that would be a reason.
Yeah.
These things are still a little bit unclear to me personally.
I think it's an interop thing, right? Like, you want to maybe...
If it's interop, then it must... Then there's... You can't have copies. Like, it needs to be a...
It needs to be metadata only. I think that's the...
The thing that we wanted to say is that reading is there. Writing will be there eventually. TM.
For
and,
sure.
So, of course, we talked a lot about how Duck Lake 1.0 is all about stability. And I guess the main question people will have by the end of the podcast is, what is Duck Lake 2.0 going to be about? You guys talking about maybe next year, like maybe some features? Are there plans? Are there ideas? And I think with Duck Lake 1.0, and will be the same with Duck Lake 2.0, is that we also very much guided by what people present to us and what they say are important to them. And the more people that say something, it's also something you take into consideration. And there were a couple features that, for time constraints, also didn't really make into Duck Lake 1.0. One of them was branching.
Yeah.
So what do you think about branching? Should we do it? Are we going to do it?
I think it's a super interesting thing. So for those that are maybe not as in the know, branching is basically the idea that essentially if you look at like a lakehouse format like Duck Lake, you can kind of consider the snapshot as a commit. Like, if you were to consider like Git, which I think most of the listeners here will be familiar with, you can consider every single commit. I mean, it's even called commit in SQL, right?
Yeah.
So it is a commit. So every snapshot is a commit. However, Duck Lake and database in general usually have this sort of single line of like history, right? So every commit is built on top of the previous commit. And that is not necessarily a restriction that is necessary. And there's been some movement in the Iceberg ecosystem. I think Nessie is the most famous one,
yes.
Or maybe the only one that does this, that has implemented branching support, which basically means you can take a snapshot and create a second branch and work on that branch independently, and then maybe try out some experimental things and then potentially either roll back or merge it back upstream. And that's kind of a cool feature because that means you can try out new things or work on things in parallel, maybe try a migration, maybe you want to add a column to a schema, see if everyone is still liking it, and then roll it back more easily because you're not actually adjusting the main branch.
It's basically Git for data, right?
So it's that's the tagline, right? Git for data. It is Git for data. And then, of course, the question there, I think, is, does this need to be a specification change? Because as we've seen with Nessie, they have built it on top of Iceberg, right? Iceberg does not support branching. It has this single flow. They have built it outside of Iceberg. So there's two possible paths there that we could take if we were to implement this. One is we build it on into the spec, which means that DuckLake 2.0 will directly feature these branches. Or the other thing is we could build it outside of the spec, where you basically make every single branch a separate DuckLake that then just shares the underlying data files, right? Because one of the core things of this branching is that you do it without copying.
Absolutely. I think there is an advantage of having it in the spec, of course, like baked in the spec, is that then all the implementations know how exactly how to do it.
For sure, for sure.
You don't end up with a nasty situation where basically you're dependent now on this one tool. To be able to do that.
Absolutely.
And we even had a few discussions about it a couple months ago, but it's something that's definitely a very interesting problem, and we already have some ideas of how to tackle it in DuckLake. The other, I think this is by far the second biggest thing, because the biggest thing is like branching. I think I've seen like, I don't know, man, 30, 40 people.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked for this.
But the second one, the second contender is role-based access control, right?
Yeah.
And of course, we can always argue that we already have a catalog database system. You can already do a lot with it.
I think Guillermo wrote a page on how to do this with the most common combination of Postgres and S3, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so you can do role-based access control in DuckLake. However, it's not baked into DuckLake. So basically, in order to do that, you have to talk to the underlying technologies you're using. You have to talk to Postgres, you have to talk to S3 or Azure, whichever blob store you're using, and do the sort of the access control there, which works, but it is not as convenient as it could be.
It's also not unified, right? Like each one is going to have to do their own solution. So there is this idea of baking it in as well.
Yeah.
We've been having a lot of requests. So I think these two features are the ones that, from what I've seen up to this point, seems to be what the people want it.
For sure.
And of course, we have a bunch of other smaller ideas. We thought about user-defined types.
Yeah.
It was something that we thought about for DuckLake 1.0, but I don't think a lot of people have asked for that one. Maybe it was just more of are they dreaming? But not sure. Mm-hmm. But we've seen like incremental materialized views as well, right?
Yeah. We've seen some requests for that. I think that is super interesting because in some ways it ties very naturally to the way that DuckLake works, because we already have the change data capture, right? We already have this, the potential of querying like incrementally what has changed in the table, hooking that up to materialized views to do this sort of incremental recomputation is in a way very natural. Like the functionality is already halfway there essentially. So that's something that's definitely feasible to, we can definitely see that making it into the specification and the implementation. Of course, the hard part there is actually defining the specification, because it's, in some sense, a materialized view is a SQL query. You're getting into sort of standardizing a SQL query in more complex scenarios. So it'll be a bit of a challenge, I think. But I think for some of the sort of more simple use case, which I think can already be very valuable, of just like doing a bunch of aggregations that are somewhat straightforward to standardize, we can definitely start working on this.
I mean, we already have macro support, right? Which in a way has a similar problem to that.
For sure.
We get around this by defining the dialects. So I guess something like that could also be a possibility.
I think we have macros and views and they define a dialect and that does work. But I think for materialized views, it's somewhat different in a sense. because you want, there's actual data aside with it, right? So if you in a macro is just a text, but a materialized view has data.
Has actual data in there. That's the point of being materialized, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But again, that's all right. But you have to somehow define what the data looks like, right? So, but we have some ideas already on how to do this in a way that's transparent and in a way that could be picked up also by other engines.
Absolutely. And I think like each of these problems have their own spiciness to it as well.
For sure, yeah. So
it would be very exciting to tackle them in the future. But again, the Click 2.0, maybe a year from now.
We'll see.
I guess we're coming to a conclusion. We talk about the Click 1.0, how great it is, test it, try it. We talk about what's the Click 2.0 going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think we want people to try it out and try it out in their production use case as well. It's super easy to set up. Mm-hmm. You don't need a lot of time. It's not a lot of hassle. You can get any kind of workload going, feel the experience for yourself. And we have a very alive community in the Discord channel as well that's always helping each other. And they, like, sometimes I look at it to maybe answer a few questions, but a lot of people are answered, and I'm like, okay, cool. Like, this is just like organizing itself. I don't really.
I think it's one of the cool things about DuckLake being basically just a bunch of SQL statements is that the specification is extremely open and understandable. So we see a lot of people coming up with their own solutions to things. Like on the Discord channel, someone was asking, like, hey, do you have support for moving a table between schemas, right? Like, I have a table in schema one, I want to move to schema two. And then someone else just came up with, like, oh yeah, just run these SQL queries on your catalog, right? And that's like, it's something that you can't really do with a format that is not so simple and understandable, right? Like, it's very, I think, very cool.
You can see a lot of creativity there. So there's a Discord channel for people to chat. Of course, like, if you find bugs, file them. A reproducer helps a lot. but we also have a look when we don't have a reproducer and try our very best to get things going. There's also opportunity to open discussions, and we do have a look on the discussion. The discussions are more like oriented like for feature requests.
For sure.
But these are very important to us. And I think in the end is always feel free to contribute as well, right? Like, DuckLake, we joke that we've been the two that have worked on it the most by now.
Yeah.
But a lot of external contribution was also developed for bug fixing and, as we said, like, for the sorted by feature and things like that. So always feel free to contribute. If you find a bug and you want to fix it, go for it. We're more than happy to always have a look.
Absolutely. All right, I think that was the podcast. See you, everyone.
See you at the DuckLake 2.0 in a year. Bye-bye.